flight commander also entailed other duties too. Now, in the case of I mentioned a few minutes ago about the CO being killed on January the 1st. Well, that fella had just come from England because he had been on the squadron previously and got an appendix attack and was sent to hospital in England. So here he is back on squadron and just lasting a few days. But this was not the first time that I lost my CO. And another time was we were sent to Wormwell in England for a practice bombing course. And at the time, I was on a 48-hour pass. When I came back from the pass, I heard the story that the CO, Jimmy Hogg, was very upset with the fact that the boys were not taking the course seriously and were not doing a very good job as far as accuracy was concerned. So he was about to go and show them how to do it. And this particular day, the sea was glassy. They were bombing away from the land. So he came down and must have, and was intent on giving a good showing, must have left it too late to pull out, because these aircraft come down pretty fast and they mush a long way too. And he pulled too hard on the control column and flicked into the sea and was drowned. And so that plus another time when I first got elected to be flight commander, the present CO had too many trips and didn't do much flying, had too many trips against him. So he more or less left it up to the two flight commanders to get him through. And so we were, in each of these cases, I was acting as CO, but not getting the rank nor the pay, if you want. But this did not bother me at all, because I figured that in that particular squadron anyway, CO, being CO was not the healthiest job, because I lost three COs while I was there. So I was quite content to be a flight commander.
I don't blame you. That the COs were sort of a higher risk position, or?
No, not. It's just the luck of the draw.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, the flight commanders did everything that the COs did. They didn't always fly, but the flight commanders had to fly.
Okay.
But do you have any other questions?
I do, actually. I was wondering, you mentioned on your data sheet that you were involved in a unique operation or incident. I'm just wondering what that unique operation or incident was.
I think probably January the 1st was the one that comes to mind, but I'll try and think of others too.
For sure.
Here it ends. I think that was the most exciting.
Okay. And, well, you've, from what I've heard here, it sounds like you've had a few exciting missions.
Well, you can't help but get into some problems.
Very true.
Is this still on?
It is.
No.
But that's all right.
Okay. This is my buddy that was with me when we got sworn into the Air Force.
Okay.
He flew Spitfires.
Oh, wow.
In Italy.
Exciting.
Yeah. So he's got quite a story to tell, too.
Did you guys ever see each other much during the war? Or
oh, yeah.
Were always...
Our families grew up together, so
okay.
He lives in Victoria, too.
But, sorry, during the war? Were you always in different airfields?
No, he was in a completely different theater of operations, yes.
He stayed in Africa then, or...?
He was in Africa, and he was in Italy.
Okay.
Yeah. And a completely different type of thing. But a very aggressive sort of a guy, and... there's a little story about... It would probably take too long, or can I read it?
Go for it.
Okay. The New Year's was brought into this wing with a bang, many bangs. The Air Force beat up is now history, however, and one or two interesting sidelights show up, such as Pilot Officer Campbell of 438 Squadron sitting in his aircraft at the end of the runway during the whole show. He had no place to go, and that's true, he was vulnerable. The Focke-Wulf 190s were seen to collide in midair, head on, and of course go in. Flight Lieutenant Frank Regan and Flying Officer Andy Lord had an anxious time trying to decide whether to run or other run or under get under an aircraft and. Were trapped for the best protection after having their aircraft blow up after they jumped out. This was still on the ground, of course, during that shoot-up. An aircraft with Flying Officer Bob Lawrence and Flying Officer Fraser of 439 Squadron on their return from an op tied into 20 mixed aircraft just coming away from B-78. That was Eindhoven. And line abreast, they dived from about 2,000 feet down to the deck. That's they mean the ground. And throwing the enemy pilots into a state of alarm and despondency, four aircraft were destroyed. You see, the Typhoon worked very well near the ground.
Okay.
It didn't work as well at altitude, like 20,000 feet. It didn't perform well. But at the ground, it could outturn the other enemy aircraft, and Bob Lawrence happened to be an excellent pilot, and he was able to put these aircraft down without even firing his guns because he was outturning them.
Oh, wow.
And they were panicking and pulling too hard, they turned too tight.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do that, the aircraft just flicks and it flicks into the ground. I'm sorry, I'm reading this poorly because it's very hard to read. The Central Airmen's Mess is quite a shambles, having been quaked from detonating 1,000-pound bombs. However, during the main attack, this building was situated for... mass by Squadron Leader Richaud and 100 other ranks. Immediately, the enemy aircraft started strafing. The Padre ordered the men onto the floor and standing up, continued praying. He never prayed too long, so long, or so fervently, to his credit, though, from... goes the safety of all these boys, all but one who ran out and was clobbered. Imagine. At 9:20 hours, two waves of mixed Focke-Wulf 190s and Messerschmitt 109s came onto the field, right on the deck. One wave out of the sun from east to west, the other directly down the runway to north to south. Subsequently, succeeding waves of approximately 12 aircraft each beat up the field in a well-organized manner with persistence, obviously well-led and briefed. Flight Lieutenant Wilson, that's my CO, and Flying Officer Keller of 438 were taking off and had a good squirt head-on at some 190s. Flight Lieutenant Wilson destroyed one but was killed in the melee. Flying Officer Keller has not been heard of since. Other pilots of 438 had a quick squirt and rushed from their aircraft. Flying Officer Watson Johnson, sitting in his aircraft, had a prolonged squirt at 3 190s, coming head-on, and claim one damage in the meantime. His aircraft was hit and started to burn, forcing him to leave his guns, and flightless Sergeant McGee at flight... large... I can't read it. Ground area of 430 shot up on 190 down with their Bren guns, and that's probably what I'm talking about before. Flight Lieutenant Gibbons of 160 up on an aircraft and engine test got nosed up in the circuit and with about 12 enemy aircraft. Chasing one right down, he destroyed it, but was himself killed, crashing on the airfield. This sudden effort on the part of the enemy, in which he displayed far greater enterprise and vigor than we have grown accustomed to, to expect from him, leads to the conclusion that something is afoot, and it does not require much in imagination to guess that the German army, which has suffered no mean extent from the attention of the tactical air force, wants to keep us on the ground while he attempts to the neat strop. Whatever that may be in his counteroffensive. The damage and casualties caused, while relatively heavy, cannot be considered exceptional in view of the scale of effort and casualties of the enemy. The fact that the group was able to fly 547 sorties after these attacks show how far away the enemy was from the realizing his aim. Yeah, we were up that afternoon and told to talk on the RT so that they would hear us. And at Eindhoven, our lesson were leasy, no, were heavier than... Our losses were heavier than they might have been because two squads were forming up on the runway for takeoff. Had the attack come a few minutes later, these aircraft would not have been on the ground to be attacked. The enemy lost 90 aircraft, a claim yet incomplete. So... I'm sorry that I read that so poorly, but the thing is not very legible. Yes.
Was it a published article that you
This would be within the squadron, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, just a type memo and to tell, didn't have to tell everybody, but just sort of put it all to together, you see.
Okay.
The activity.
Perfect.
You were having some questions.
Oh, yes. Can we go back just for a minute? I'm wondering how you found the conversion from being a flight instructor to flying combat missions.
Oh, that. Well, of course, I was looking forward to it. I didn't want to spend the war instructing. So it was not as if I didn't expect what was going to happen. I recall that when we were at Brussels on my first trip, I thought, well, you've done it now, you've got to stay with it. And I talked to myself and I answered fine, and there seemed to be no panic. It was just a job that had to be done, and we went ahead and did it.
Perfect.
Yeah. No, that was not a difficult conversion.
Okay. Did you find it more exciting to be flying combat missions?
Oh, by far. I mean, you really... how should I put it? In my case, I must say that I wasn't scared because I was too busy.
Okay.
When you had a great big operation planned and it didn't come off because of weather, that's the time you were worrying.
Okay.
Thinking about what was going to happen, and I would say that's probably the only time that that it worried me that much. Because in the air, man, you're busy.
I bet.
Yeah. And we had a movie theater on the squadron, and sometimes at night we would go to that, and you can get completely lost in the story. And then the thing is over, and you go outside, and then, well, where am I? And you're just completely lost in this story.
Okay.
And you don't realize you're over there, and there's a job to do, and you have to be up at it the next day.
Yeah.
And, it's tough to lose people, you know, to have friends that... perhaps I was not as close to some of them being a flight commander, because I didn't stay in the same place that they did. I stayed in a different barracks with the CO and the other flight commander.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't get really close, and maybe that's good. Although some of these fellows that have been in our little group here...
Mm-hmm.
One chap instructed with me in High River, and he arrived on my squadron, and I was able to take him on his familiarization of the country, and as I did with Squadron Leader Wilson, and show them the ropes, in other words.
Perfect.
And so that part... was good in that we were still friends. Now, he's passed on now, but we have been friends all these years.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And some of the other ones that I didn't know as well there, I've known better after the war than I did on the squadron.
Oh, perfect.
And they're all first-class people.
Good to hear.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there anything else there?
I'm just wondering if you'd tell me about what you did that earned you your DFC.
Oh, well, I really consider that. You can go and read the citation, but there was no one thing that I did that they singled out. And maybe in the St. Vith area, there was a lot of... work done down there, but I consider this that I'm wearing it for the whole group, because they all did the same thing as I did. And the only difference was that I had to a little bit more responsibility, but I can go and get that thing and read it to you so that you'll know what I'm talking about.
Sure. Since September 1944, this officer has completed numerous operational sorties, including many low-level attacks against heavily defended enemy transports, canal locks, railway sidings, and bridges. On one occasion, during an attack on a railway siding, Flight Lieutenant Spooner's aircraft was hit by the flying debris of an exploding ammunition train. Despite this, an intense anti-aircraft fire from the enemy's defenses, he pressed home his attack on the remaining targets. As a flight commander, this officer has always displayed brilliant leadership and a fine fighting spirit. This was particularly evident during the German offensive around St. Vith, when he led the squadron on a number of low-level attacks against heavily defended enemy transport convoys. So, very well done.
This was our mascot.
Okay.
This was done by Disney, and this is the original one that he did it for us, but we were called the Wildcat Squadron.
Oh, perfect.
And the little pins that we wore were the picture of a wildcat.
Very good.
Yeah.
it's quite a cute logo.
Yeah.
It kind of encapsulates everything.
Softest blue like a captain.
Yeah, well, you asked about when some specific trip previously, and I thought of another one that you might like to hear about, and that is early in my tour when I, before I was a flight commander and before I knew very much about what was going on, I was on a train bombing trip in Holland, and we had singled out this train and put the flat cars out on either end, and that allowed us to go in and empty our guns into the rest of it. Well, of course, we did not know that it was an ammunition train. And when I was going in on it like this, everything blew up, and all this stuff I flew through, and I didn't know whether I was going to make it or not, because all this shrapnel and everything was up in the air at the height I was flying, because I was going down pretty low. Anyhow, it turned out all I got, besides hearing a lot of stuff rattling on the aircraft, was a piece of shrapnel from a bomb that was lodged, didn't know this at the time, but it was lodged in the leading edge of the wing and had punctured the gas tank, but not serious enough to lose all my fuel so that I was still able to get home all right. Okay. But that was the story I forgot to tell you.
Oh, no, no, no. Yeah. Was there anything else that you'd like to share?
Well, I'm just thankful that, looking back, that I did my tour on singles and didn't have to put that aircraft like Bob did through heavy flak every time I went out. I guess there was flak there on my case too, but you could evade to a certain amount by using your head and doing the correct thing. Mm-hmm. Whereas bombers, they just plowed on and hope for the best. Looking back at it, I think I'm very lucky to have survived it, and I like what I did. I think that the theater of war that I was in, that is 2nd Tactical Air Force, was one that accomplished a lot of things. We don't really get much, people don't seem to know what typhoons are, but I think if you ask Germans, they would know what to us.
Sure, you must have made quite an impact.
Yeah. Well, it was a terror machine, just from the noise of the engine, because it was a 24-cylinder engine and 2,200 horsepower. And we used to get people from the Army come and say to us, "You don't even have to do anything. Just fly by us on the way home." They said that's the only times the mortars will stop, because they hear the typhoons coming. And so, you know, somebody appreciated this.
A good thing.
Yeah, it was a good war. Well, for me, that is. I survived, and I guess you can't wish any more than that.
Well, you did the best you can, and
yeah,
it sounds like you had a good tour.
Well, yes, I did.
And you had some exciting missions to help us later on.
Yeah, I think I've pretty well covered it. There probably are lots of other stories that I can't think of right now.
Well, that's all right.
I'm 84 years old, so I'm allowed a little bit of memory loss.
Yeah. Well, if you think of anything else, you know how to get in touch with me.
Yes.
And you can always come back and do another tape.
Sure. Okay.
Perfect.
Good.
So it was a pleasure.
Well, thank you.